Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, transparency you can see through. That was the slogan last year, wasn't it? The Obama administration has once again, while the Sunday Yak shows are full of people talking, arguing about where to have the trial of KSM and KSM-FM, this sort of snuck under the radar. The Obama administration has once again refusing a court proceeding, suggesting that they release photographs of stuff done to detainees in Abu Ghraib and other fine communities. And they did so with new powers, you see, because we've been around this track before. But because there's a court involved, they needed new powers. So Congress, you remember this debate, don't you? The debate about the new powers to keep a kibosh on the detainee abuse photographs? Yeah, of course you do. Because the new powers were in a little notice provision slipped into the budget bill for the Homeland Security Department, because new powers and a budget really go together. Transparency you can see through, ladies and gentlemen. Public service of your very own government. Those photographs would just inflame you. See, what I love is when we do something like pledging to close Guantanamo, even though we're not going to close Bagram, a lovely place in Afghanistan where our detainees have died. These things happen. Then the opponents say, well, why do you do that to please? They hate us anyway. They're always going to hate us anyway. But, you know, when these photographs are in danger of coming out, it's just going to inflame them and make them hate us. They hate us anyway. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're trying to figure out this modern world, it's a system. It creates needs, and it satisfies them. Exposure to high levels of a controversial chemical found in thousands of everyday plastic products, it's BPA, bisphenol A, the very first word in bisphenols, exposure to that chemical appears to cause, guess what? Erectile dysfunction in men. See, you wondered why there's Viagra. Now you know. It's a system. We cause the problem, we bring the cure. There's a new study funded by the federal government, published in the journal Human Reproduction. Man, extend my subscription right now, is the first to examine the impact of BPA on the reproductive systems of human males. Previous studies have involved mice or rats. And they don't got no Viagra for rats, do they? Did they start with rats? When Mr. Rat is ready. The research comes as government agencies debate the safety of BPA. It's found in thousands of consumer products ranging from dental sealants, boy am I glad I still have my own teeth, to canned food linings, eat fresh. It's so ubiquitous it's been detected in the urine, pardon the expression, of 93% of the United States population. So it would appear to be as hard to escape as high fructose corn syrup. Eat up, won't you? It's a system. Men in China, four factories, were exposed to elevated levels of BPA. They were followed over 5 years, and their sexual health was compared with that of male workers in other Chinese factories where BPA was not present. The men handling BPA were four times as likely to not be ready when the time is right, and seven times as likely to have difficulty with, you know, BPA, incidentally, was developed in the 1930s as a synthetic version of estrogen. And wouldn't you know it, it appears to throw off the hormonal balance in the human body. Who'd have thunk it? Synthetic estrogen plays havoc with their hormonal balance. But, you see, we create the need, we create the solution. It's a system. I feel better. The only thing we haven't figured out yet is what to do with the nuclear waste. A leaked Energy Department memo now suggests that the Yucca Mountain repository for high-level nuclear waste that we've all been waiting for may soon be not happening. The memo seems to suggest that Yucca Mountain is dead, says Nevada Commission on Nuclear Projects Chairman Richard Bryan. Of course, a mountain can't be dead, but you know what he means. So, is your backyard available for the nuclear waste? If so, you know, drop me a line. Catch me on Twitter. Hello, welcome to the show.
You can feel the horses under the hood. They thick and thin, the bull is out of the wood. And she the smoothest ride, yeah, you'll ever feel. And she the delta slide of automobiles. We'll be right back.
from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And, you know, we turn for economic wisdom in these troubled times to those who know best. And here is a pungent, pithy analysis of the housing problem from none other than News Corp head honcho Rupert Murdoch in his recent interview Down Under, explaining the cause of the housing crisis that was at the heart of the housing meltdown, that was the heart of the economic crisis that we're now in. Here he is in mid-explanation.
Easy money policy for far too long, and that fed a huge housing boom.
Have the lessons been learned from
a bubble, which had to be pricked, which, sure enough, was pricked in the end.
Pricked in the end. Why didn't you prescribe that before? I'm sure there were plenty of people who would be willing to volunteer. Anyway, next time, we'll remember, prick it in the end. Now, ladies and gentlemen.
It's just a few bad apples messing up the bunch. A few bad apples bringing up your lunch.
You know, it's, you wonder, was the story now we're supposed to believe that just all these troops, Americans, and now increasingly others as well, as you'll hear in a moment, were just improvising the same thing, eerily the same thing, over many different miles, locations separated by many different miles, by miles. Hey, Miles. It's just like the premise that you could walk into any improv in the United States and hear random selection of comics riffing on the same, well, that you can. All right, anyway, the British Ministry of Defense has confirmed it's investigating 33 cases of alleged abuse, including rape and torture, ladies and gentlemen, of Iraqi civilians by British soldiers. The lawyer representing the alleged victims, Phil Shiner, says there can be hundreds of uninvestigated claims of abuse because they didn't want to claim or file complaints while the British were still there for fear that, you know, Groundhog Day. One claimant alleges soldiers based the abuse they allegedly subjected him to on photographs of the abuse at Abu Ghraib. Maybe that's why we don't want to release the photos, you know, so people will imitate it the way they do horror movies. One Iraqi claims he was raped by two British soldiers in 2003 when he was 16. Others claim they were stripped, naked, abused, and photographed. The Armed Forces Minister of Great Britain rejected suggestions that a full public inquiry should be held into British troops' behavior in Iraq. Seven of the 33 cases under investigation have been reported within the last month. The rest date back significantly beyond that period. And here we go. Quote, only a tiny number of individuals have been shown to have fallen short of our high standards. That's the bad apples argument all over again, even though they're doing the same things. People were quite scared of the British, says a spokesperson for the attorney, because the level of abuse was so high that people feared the British could detain them. The Royal Military Police have launched a criminal investigation into allegations that British soldiers repeatedly raped and mutilated an 18-year-old Iraqi civilian who was working as a laborer at Camp Breadbasket in Basra, the scene of other abuse allegations. Shiner, the attorney, also represents the interests of Baha Musa, an Iraqi who died after being taken into British military custody. He was arrested at a hotel in Basra. There is that name again. In September 2003, the 26-year-old father of two died the following day, having suffered 93 separate injuries, including fractured ribs and a broken nose. Man, you fall off those hotel beds in Basra, you hit the floor hard. Corporal Donald Payne was the first member of the British Armed Forces to be convicted of a war crime when he pleaded guilty at a court-martial 3 years ago to inhumanely treating civilians. He was dismissed from the army and sentenced to 1 year in jail. So you think, well, he only inhumanely treated civilians. There's not, he wasn't convicted of killing anybody. So, all right. Payne was one of the people seen kicking and hitting Baha Moussa, according to a public inquiry into Moussa's death. Eyewitness testimony from a former British soldier. Kicking and hitting Moussa shortly before he died. So maybe there's one death that Corporal Payne is responsible for. But, it, you know, he served a year in jail for an Iraqi death, ladies and gentlemen. It's cute. It's very cute. Bad apples. They seem to be growing them by the orchard full. And now, ladies and gentlemen, News of the Warm. The award-winning News of the Warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Yes, we can. Spurred by a warming climate, daily record high temperatures occurred twice as often as record lows over the last decade across the continental United States, according to new research. The ratio of record highs to lows is likely to increase dramatically in coming decades if emissions of greenhouse gases continue to climb. Also, the ratio to high-low records. High-lows records. Screwed up that joke. Climate change is making itself felt in terms of day-to-day weather in the United States, says the lead author and a senior scientist at the National Center for Atmospheric Research, NCAR. The way these records are being broken show how our climate is already shifting. This would answer those who say, well, you know, there's still cold weather. Yes, there is. If temperatures were not warming, the number of record daily highs and lows being set each year would be approximately even. Instead, from January 1, 2000 to September 30, 2009, the U.S. set 291,000 record highs and 142,000 record lows. The country experienced unusually mild winter weather and intense summer heat waves. The decade's warming was more pronounced in the western United States, where the ratio was more than 2 to 1, than the eastern United States. The study found that the 2-to-1 ratio across the country as a whole could be attributed more to a comparatively small number of record lows than to a large number of record highs. This indicates much of the nation's warming is occurring at night, when we can't see it, and when temperatures are dipping less often to record lows, or to high lows records. See, I tried it again. Satellite observations and a state-of-the-art regional atmospheric model have independently confirmed that the Greenland ice sheet is losing mass at an accelerating rate, according to a new study in Science magazine. The mass loss is equally distributed between increased iceberg production, driven by acceleration of Greenland's fast-flowing outlet glaciers, and increased meltwater production at the ice sheet surface. Professor Jonathan Bamber, author of the paper, said it's clear from these results that mass loss from Greenland has been accelerating since the late 1990s, and the underlying causes suggest this trend is likely to continue in the near future. The Greenland ice sheet contains enough water to cause a global sea level rise of 7 meters. Wait a minute. I can figure that out. No, I'm not going to take the time. I have the thing in my pocket to do it, but I wasn't set up for this. Since 2000, the ice sheet has lost about 1,500. And I'm stopping at that because, the mass of 1 cubic kilometer of water. So it's lost 1,500 of those, representing on average a global sea level rise of about 0.5 millimeter a year, or 5 millimeters since 2000. At the same time, the surface melting started to increase around 1996. Snowfall on the ice sheet also increased at approximately the same rate, masking the losses for nearly a decade. And a significant part of the additional meltwater refroze in the cold snowpack. Without these moderating effects, post-1996 Greenland mass loss would have been double the amount observed now. New data show the balance between the airborne and absorbed fraction of carbon dioxide has stayed approximately constant since 1850, despite emissions of CO2 having risen from 2 billion tons a year in 1850 to 35 billion tons a year now. This suggests that the terrestrial ecosystems and the oceans have a much greater capacity to absorb carbon dioxide than had been previously expected. But this would be good news. Get a guzzler. Come on. Burn some stuff. The results run contrary to a significant body of recent research which expects the capacity of terrestrial ecosystems and the oceans to absorb CO2 should start to diminish as CO2 emissions increase, causing greenhouse gases to skyrocket. But Dr. Wolfgang Knorr at the University of Bristol found, in fact, the trend in the airborne fraction has been essentially zero. The strength of a new study, published in Geophysical Research Letters, is that it rests solely on measurements and statistical data, not on models. Is this good news for climate negotiations in Copenhagen? Not necessarily, says Knorr. Like all studies of this kind, there are uncertainties in the data. So rather than relying on nature to provide a free service soaking up our waste carbon, we need to ascertain why the proportion being absorbed has not changed. More studies. Another grant, please. Georgia Tech City and Regional Planning Professor Brian Stone is publishing a paper in Environmental Science and Technology that suggests policymakers need to address more than just greenhouse gas emissions. They need to address the influence of global deforestation and urbanization on climate change. And rising sea levels threaten to damage homes worth up to $10 billion Australian along the coast of Victoria, flooding the St. Kilda Shore, beautiful beach, much like the home of the homeless, and put key industries at risk by 2100, according to Australian government research. 45,000 homes in the state of Victoria, worth $10.3 billion, face inundation due to more extreme weather, particularly the combination of storm surges and rising sea levels. Well, I'll tell you what to do. Call the Army Corps of Engineers. They'll come over there and build something. Oh, yeah, they'll build something. They will build something. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And we begin our next copyrighted feature with Sean Hannity this week on the Fox News Channel.
Although it pains me to say this, Jon Stewart, Comedy Central, he was right. Now, on his program last night, he mentioned that we had played some incorrect video on this program last week while talking about the Republican health care rally on Capitol Hill. He was correct. We screwed up. We aired some video of a rally in September, along with the video from the actual event. It was an inadvertent mistake, but a mistake nonetheless. So, Mr. Stewart, you were right. We apologize.
Inadvertent. Because, you know, the rally in September would naturally be in the same file with the rally from this week, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that be the way you would organize your news footage file? By the way, that's just the tip of the iceberg. People I know in New Orleans who are in the business of trying to get conventions and business meetings to come to town say that, I don't know if this year they're still hearing it, but last year they were still hearing from people, you guys still underwater? Because the practice of wallpapering has taken hold at the news channels. So that if you have a talking head guest, you don't want to look at the talking head for more than 4 seconds. So you throw up some footage of whatever it is the guest may or may not be talking about that runs on a loop. It's called wallpaper. And they never say old footage. So when somebody's on talking about New Orleans, they show some old flood footage. And people around the country think, those poor saps, they're still underwater. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Dateline, Illinois. GOP gubernatorial candidate Jim Ryan issued his first outright apology this week for wrongfully putting two men on death row instead of prosecuting the real killer of a 10-year-old. Former top prosecutor of DuPage County made a statement after a jury this week sentenced Brian Dugan to death for the murder, which Ryan had incorrectly blamed on Ronaldo Cruz and Alex Hernandez. Both men were later exonerated. In those cases, the system and I failed to achieve a just outcome, Ryan said, and for that, I am sorry. Ryan, a former Illinois attorney general, went on to say that he'd like to be governor, even though he's sorry, or maybe because. Dateline Phoenix, Chase Bank officials have apologized for accidentally selling a Phoenix couple's home, even though their modified mortgage payments were up to date. Jeff and Yanthi Zerner said the new owner of the house posted a notice on the door November 4th that led them to discover their property had been foreclosed. Sorry, sorry, sorry. I get this notice that says you have 5 days to vacate the properties, F. Zerner says. So I call the number and I say, who are you? And they say, we're the legal owners of this house. It went up for foreclosure. He and his wife had finished their trial mortgage modification with Chase only days before and were told they would qualify for a permanent modification. We paid Chase several hundred dollars, which they accepted in good faith. Zerner said, I feel extremely ripped off. Chase admitted the house was sold in error and apologized to the couple. We apologize for the confusion over the modification actions and the parallel foreclosure steps Chase takes as a precaution. We have reached out to Ms. Zerner to discuss where we go from here, Chase officials said in a statement. I think we go home. Dateline Raleigh, North Carolina, the head of the organization representing Wake County School Employees is apologizing for sending a message to group leaders in which she accused four newly elected school board members of not caring about children and teachers. Jennifer Linane said she inadvertently sent the message that she said was written in anger. There's that inadvertence again. Can we just... If we could just fight inadvertence, maybe a stop inadvertence telethon. Although she apologized this week, the message highlights the tension between new board members and her group. It was a mistake, she said in an interview. We all make mistakes. I apologized. Hey, the mayor of China's Shijiazhuang province or city apologized for the response to the region's heaviest snows in six decades as Beijing pledged funds to help people caught in the storms that have left 38 dead and thousands stranded. Ai Wenli, mayor of the capital of Hebei province, battered by 22 inches of snow, said at the briefing that he and other city officials would strive to provide better relief to the city of about 10 million. They apologize when people die in a natural disaster. About 4.7 million people in seven provinces have been affected by the snowstorms. British television personality Sharon Osbourne. Come on. Come on, UPI. Let your hair down. Call her what she really is. Reality TV star. Don't those words sound good together? Sharon Osbourne has apologized via Twitter for saying singer Susan Boyle is a lovely lady who has been hit with an ugly stick. Boyle, finalist on Britain's Got Talent. Osbourne joked about the 47-year-old singer's dowdy appearance this month in an interview on Sirius XM Radio. That's still around? Really? Then apologized for her remarks in a Twitter posting. Susan Boyle is a lovely, gracious woman, and I took advantage of that by poking fun at her. I would never want to be responsible for hurting Susan, and I must apologize for getting a cheap laugh at her expense. Unquote. Sharon Osbourne, who is some hot cookie herself. Taylor Swift has accomplished the feat of being the youngest performer to be awarded the Country Music Association's Awards Entertainer of the Year. But a negative comment came from Wynonna Judd of the band The Judds. In a statement after Swift's award, Ms. Judd said, it was too much too soon. Time is God's way of keeping everything from happening at once. Is that why he does it? I thought it was just his way of making us always late. It's just too much of a good thing soon. I want kids to earn it. Judd was young when she and her mother, Naomi, became country stars. Judd now says she realizes the comment conveyed negativity. She said it was not meant to be. She was not trying to send the message that one should dismiss Taylor Swift's talent, and contribution in the music world, and she has apologized on her website. She'd love you to go to her website and see it. Boost the hit count. Dateline Highland Heights, Kentucky. The student newspaper at Northern Kentucky University has apologized after running an advertisement for a website selling white supremacist music. The advertisement for Resistance Records ran in two issues of the weekly paper before editor Tim Owens learned what the website was selling. An apology appeared this week. We received numerous complaints about the ad, and to those who were offended, I apologize. Owens wrote, please know that we did not intend to offend anyone and will pay closer attention to the ads we run in the future, unquote. Resistance Records is an arm of the National Alliance, a white supremacist group. But they rock. Here are some people I've never heard of. Josh Duhamel's purported one-night paramour, stripper Nicole Forrester, apologized to the actor's wife, pop star Fergie, saying she never thought the tryst would become public. I thought, nobody's going to find out. It's not going to hurt anybody. I'm sorry I didn't think of it like I think of it now. Forrester said she's quit stripping since the scandal after her son told her, quote, you're disgusting, unquote. Lovely mother-son moment there. And British Prime Minister Gordon Brown has apologized to the mother of a deceased serviceman who took offense after he sent her a handwritten letter of condolence that misspelled her name. 10 Downing Street said Brown was deeply mortified that she was unhappy with the letter, which contains a series of spelling mistakes and a crossed-out letter in her son's name. Brown issued a statement apologizing for any unintended mistake and saying sorry to other bereaved families who may have had difficulty reading his handwriting. Brown lost the sight of one eye earlier in his life and writes with a thick marker pen just to make it harder to read. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Mother liked her white wine when she was alive. She was desperate to live, but her limit was five. Carefully I'd kiss her and send her off to bed. We always stuck with white wine, we stayed away from red. Always stick with white wine, stay away from mother liked her white wine. She'd have a glass or two almost every single night after her day was through. Sancerre, Chardonnay, Chablis, Pinot Grigio, just to take the edge off, just to get the glow. You got to take the edge off if you wanna get the. Mother liked her white wine, she'd have a glass or three, and we'd sit out on the screen porch, white winos, mom and me. We'd talk about her childhood, recap my career. When we got to my father, that was when I'd switch to beer. We got to the old man and I'd always switch to mother liked her white wine. She'd have a glass or four, each empty bottle a dead soldier. The marriage was the war. When we blurred the edges, when we drank a lot, that's when I got nervous, when the glow got hot. I always get nervous when the glow gets. I still like my white wine and I'll have a glass or two. And when I'm down, I'll drink some whiskey. It's something I shouldn't do. And every now and then I'll take a drop of red when I'm with a woman that I want to take to bed. When I'm with a woman that I want to take to mother liked her white wine when she was alive. She was desperate to live, but her limit was five. Carefully I'd kiss her, send her off to bed. Thank God we stuck to white wine and we stayed away from mother liked her white wine.
This is Le Show, and now, news from outside the bubble. Well, this should raise the hackles. The Pakistani army ran training camps for a Muslim extremist group until recently, with the acceptance of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency. They were all in it. Hey, don't you want to enlist? This, according to France's foremost anti-terrorist expert, reported in the Times of London, owned by Rupert Pricht in the end, Murdoch. Jean-Louis Bruyere retired in 2007 after 15 years as a counterterrorism expert. Reached this conclusion after interrogating a French militant who had been trained by Lashkar-e-Taiba, a Muslim extremist group. Weren't they responsible for the Mumbai bombing? And arrested in Australia in 2003. Lashkar, which was set up to fight India over disputed Kashmiri territory, had become part of the international Islamic network of al-Qaeda, according to Mr. Bruyere. The suspect told Bruyere that the Pakistani military were running the Lashkar-e-Taiba training camp where he spent 2.5 months in 2001, along with two Britons and two Americans. He was driven in a 4x4 through army word blocks to the high-altitude camp where more than 2,000 men were being trained by Pakistani regular army officers. The links between the Lashkar and the Pakistani army are more than close, When the camp was resupplied, all the material was dropped off by Pakistani Army helicopters, and there were regular inspections by the Pakistani Army and the CIA, unquote, Bruyere. The U.S. Army carried out, the CIA carried out spot checks to ensure that Pakistan was sticking to an agreement not to train any foreigners at the militant organization, the judge said. After 9/11, the Americans put pressure on the Pakistani government to put more effective controls on the activities of the Islamic organizations linked to al-Qaeda. Not to shut them down, just controls. The judge said it was possible the Americans had turned a blind eye to the organization's training of foreign operatives. It's not clear whether the Pakistani Armed Forces and the ISI, the Pakistani Intelligence Service, which was bombed this week, by the way, were playing the same game as the Pakistani government over Islamic terrorism, says the judge, whose book is titled Some Things That I Wasn't Able to Say. Good title. Almost as good as Going Rouge. And from the Times of London, owned by same guy, morale has fallen among U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan because of the rising violence there and long and repeated deployments for troops after 8 years of fighting in that country and in Iraq. The Army admitted this week that a survey confirmed a report that morale had dropped markedly among troops in Afghanistan, an account that received widespread coverage and scrutiny by the Pentagon. According to the Army survey, troops in the 3rd and 4th deployments had lower morale and more mental health problems than those with fewer deployments. The same troops reported significantly more stress and other psychological problems and far more marital problems among those who were married. Good they clarified that. Old habits from Saddam Hussein's era are becoming familiar again. Torture is routine in government detention centers in Iraq. Things are bad and getting worse, even by regional standards. This from Reuters, quoting Samer Muscati, who works for Human Rights Watch. His outfit reports that with American oversight gone, Iraqi police and security people are again pulling out fingernails and beating detainees, even those who've already made confessions. Confess more! A limping former prison inmate tells how he realized after a bout of torture in a government ministry that lasted for 5 days that he had been relatively lucky when he was reunited with fellow prisoners. He said he saw many had lost limbs and organs. I don't know how you see that they've lost organs, but there you go. In July, the Baghdad police reimposed a nightly curfew, making it easier for the police to arrest people disliked by the government. In particular, they've been targeting leaders of the Awakening Councils, groups of Sunnis, many of them former insurgents and sympathizers, who have helped the government to drive out or capture Sunni rebels who refuse to come inside. Instead of being drawn into the new power setup, many of them in the past few months have been hauled off to prison. In the most delicate cases, the arrests are being made by an elite unit called the Baghdad Brigade, also known as the Dirty Squad, which reports to the office of the Prime Minister. Sentencing is getting harsher. More people sentenced to death. Journalists are prominent victims of Iraq's new judicial system. That's why we fought. Doctors in Iraq's war-ravaged enclave of Fallujah, according to The Guardian, are dealing with up to 15 times as many chronic deformities in infants and a spike in early life cancers that may be linked to toxic materials left over from the fighting. The extraordinary rise in birth defects has crystallized over recent months as specialists working in Fallujah's overstressed health system have started compiling detailed clinical records of all babies born. The rise in birth defects, which include a baby born with two heads, babies with multiple tumors, and others with nervous system problems, are unprecedented and at present unexplainable. An Iraqi court has ordered the British newspaper The Guardian to pay Prime Minister Maliki charges of £52,000, about $70,000, after supporting a complaint by the Prime Minister that he'd been defamed by a story in the paper in April describing him as increasingly autocratic. Well, this proves that, doesn't it? The ruling ignored testimony by three expert witnesses from the Iraqi Journalists Union summoned by the court, who all said the article was neither defamatory nor insulting. The paper will appeal. This is part of a wider crackdown against media outlets designed to discourage scrutiny of public officials, according to the Journalists' Freedom Organization of Iraq. They say the Iraqi media have been inundated by writs from officials in recent months and have lost official access and status to state-backed organizations. See what happens when we take our eye off either ball. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. So, there have been all these deaths in the reality TV world here. And now, to prove that the British really are ahead of us, Channel 4 in England has canceled Big Brother. And Wife Swap. Wife Swap will be replaced with a new reality show in which a passenger jet will be crashed as part of a scientific experiment. The show is called Plane Crash. Oh, but there'll be more. There always is. And we'll check in with the latest in the reality world. Not to be confused with the real world. Next here on the show.
How many boys, one night stands, how many lips, how many hands have held you? Like I'm holding you tonight. Staying up late, too much powder and too much pain, so you can't hide from the turning of the tide. Did they run their fingers up and down the shabby dress? Did they find some tender moment there in your caress? The boys all say you look so fine, but don't come back for a second time, or you can't hide from the turning of the tide. Hotel room where you can't hide from the turning of the tide. Did they find some tender moment there in your caress? The boys all say you look so fine, but don't come back for a second time. You can't hide from the turning of the tide.
A job swap at a studio leads to something much more personal and hot.
Got to be Extra Access tonight for mid-November 2009.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mike DeVere.
And I'm Pat Mungo, live from my very own halfway house.
Job swapping in the executive suites of major studios has been as much of a Hollywood tradition as limo sex. But one of the most recent switcheroos switched on the idea machine, and a new reality series was born. Todd Azjak was, until recently, director of the RKO theme parks, including Casper the Friendly Ghostland and the Wacky World of Mr. Magoo. This week, he became head of the studio.
You know, I was just thinking about all the... I think my dad would call them changes, but all the adjustments I had to go through coming over from theme parks, a world where, you know, where everything's on an oversized, overamped cartoon kind of energy, to the mothership where, things are a lot weirder. And then I thought, wow, if this is what happens when you swap jobs, you know, what happens when women swap breast implants, you know? I mean, if they did, and if they don't yet... Hey, that's why God invented reality TV.
Boob swap was the kind of pitch. You know, a guy doesn't even get to the end of the first sentence, and you know you've got a show.
Edison Steakhouse is programming head of the fledgling WC network.
Now, we're the new kid on the block. We can take chances. We can maybe push not only the envelope, but, you know, the whole damn paper tray. But this was such a no-brainer. It greenlit itself. We just had to make sure it was a no-brainer medically, too.
The production team spent almost 2 days finding an experienced cosmetic surgeon who would approve and loosely supervise the procedures. Although Dr. Sanjay Patel wouldn't talk to us, he said the publicity doesn't help his business, the host of Boob Swap, Joan Rivers, raves about him.
This man is a magician with a pair of, you know, whatever it is he uses. He says to us, he says, we put these things in, we can take them out, we can put them in somewhere else. I loved it. He says, it's not brain surgery, like there'd be a show called Brain Swap. I mean, please, even Dr. Stephen Hawking wouldn't watch that.
We gave him our best time slot opposite Jay Leno, and we hope for the best.
In this exclusive sneak leak of the first episode, Chandler, an aspiring actress in her early 20s, swaps implants with Cassandra, a local news anchor who's just turned 40-ish.
I wake up, and I'm like, this is so not me. You know, like, I'm cool with augmentation and everything, but this woman, I mean, clearly she needed professional help. Needs.
Well, I don't have to go on that diet anymore. I just lost 15 pounds.
And the very cool thing is that I do all my stuff for the whole season in just a couple of days. So I'm very excited.
Before its first episode has even aired, Boob Swap has pushed the buttons on at least one envelope. One pressure group complains that the series puts plastic surgeons in a bad light. But network officials hope that, good or bad, the light Boob Swap ends up in is big and bright.
On the cable dial, reality rules as never before. The one-time education and arts television channel has rebranded itself as Eat TV, and it's just premiering its first reality show, DBF, Dead Best Friend. Artie Kornblick is the producer of DBF.
We started out with two pretty basic economic realities staring us in the face, okay? One, we can't afford to do expensive productions like Megan Wants a Millionaire, okay? We got to keep it lean and mean, which, you know, to me is the best TV anyhow, you know? Like the kids say, keep it real, Holmes. B, second economic reality. A lot of shows have a contestant involved in a serious crime. They end up burning a lot of their investment in episodes they can never use, they can't air. We say, we know how to weave those episodes of creepy guys stalking their own girlfriends or vice versa and make it a compelling, extreme, must-see, totally viral show.
Former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich signed up to host DBF. Did the content worry him?
The judge wouldn't let me do I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here because of the travel. This show, he let me do.
Dead Best Friend won't totally rely on footage other shows have shot either, according to Artie Kornblicht.
Look, I'll be honest with you. We could coast on purchased footage because the casting principles most shows use won't, or don't, or can't, or aren't supposed to weed out the psychotics. Well, you know, boom, that's showtime right there. But we do have aspirations to bring some seriously over-the-line people to a very stressful island setting under the auspices of a government that takes a very relaxed view of the matter and see what happens. If we don't come out with at least one DBF, you know, hey, we can always cancel the payment for the orphanage.
DBF, Dead Best Friend, premieres on the Eat TV channel before the end of the year.
Seals it for this edition, but Extra Access Tonight comes blazing back tomorrow with the results of our exclusive IEAT Twitter poll.
We asked you who would win in Jello Wrestling, Sarah Palin or Katie Couric, and the results will have you asking for more.
Till then, I'm Mike DeVere.
And I'm Pat Mungo. So long from Culver City.
Got a little story for you now. What's that? Now pull up a chair. Listen here, children. Empty storefronts filling up the malls. Foreclosure man's making lots more calls. You've still got a job, but your paycheck's red. You can only get a loan if you're a bank. You can only get a loan if you're a bank. But there are glimmers of hope, glimmers of hope, rays of sunlight towards which you can grow. A way to say yes when the world says no. It's a vision that shimmers, business that simmers, lively as a couch full of David Schwimmers. Turn up the dimmers, bask in the glimmers of hope. I'm talking to you, glimmers of hope. Yeah. Gets huger by the day. Can we ever really make it go away? There are bailouts for the rich, layoffs for the rest. You've got the stress, you must have failed the test. You've got the stress, you must have failed the test. But there are glimmers of hope, glimmers of hope. Oh, the shower is cold, but they are slipping you so. A way to deal when no way you can cope. It's no pool but two skimmers, school but no frimmers. Slicker than a lake full of Olympic swimmers. Turn up the dimmers and bask in those glimmers of hope. Glimmers of hope. Now listen to me. Your house will soon be worth less than your car. And a night making autos near where you are. A big night out is gonna be a dollar meal. It feels like no one knows the way you feel. It feels like no one knows the way you feel. But wait a minute. There are glimmers of hope, glimmers of hope. Oh, it's getting less slippery, even though it's a slope. More reasons to smile, less reasons to mope. It's a vision that shimmers, business that simmers. Lively as a couch full of David Schwimmers. Turn up the dimmers and bask in those glimmers of hope.
And the preceding song actually is for sale at Amazon and iTunes. You serious? Yes, I am. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America, via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. Shortwave, that is. That's why I screwed it up. I was trying to give you the effect of listening on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available on your smartphone at stitcher.com. Available as a free download for members at audible.com/theshow. And available as a free podcast from kcrw.com. How much more available can it be? It would be just like, no way it could be more available if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist of the tunes heard hereon, just part of the panoply of fascination, available for you at harryshearer.com. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. And should you care, this program is on Twitter at LeTwits, at LeTwits. You know, as Rudy Giuliani says, we shouldn't try Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in New York because that's where he wants to be tried. So, should Khalid Sheikh Mohammed get hungry, we probably shouldn't feed him. I think Rudy would agree with that. Ladies and gentlemen, the show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.